Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. I want to share one of my favorite lessons I ever learned as a Buddhist monk from one of my fellow monks, a little more, well, somewhat more senior than me. There's another Canadian monk who perhaps some of you may have heard of. His name is Ajahn Pavaro. Pavaro, Pavaro. And he's 5 years senior to me. And interestingly, Calgary is kind of his hometown. And he was a professor at U of C here. And he was quite involved in the earlier days of this place getting founded. He's kind of back when he was a layperson just before ordaining, he got together some of the Sri Lankans here and did a lot of the planning around founding this place, eh? Before he then went off to become a monk. So yeah, he's living out in Ontario right now. Last I heard, he's at Tisarna. Anyway, so he was sort of like you could call him an older brother monk to me for several years. And one of my favorite lessons that he taught kind of went like this. There's this really cool statistic about penalty goals in soccer, okay? Like, European football, like soccer. Whenever there's one of these penalty goals where, the ball is just placed in a stationary spot, and then one guy gets to kind of run up to the ball and make one kick and try to score the goal. And somebody or other did a study on these penalty goal kickers, and what they found is, like when the referee or whatever blows the whistle, which is the signal, okay, you can now kick the ball, Now, many soccer players, as soon as that whistle blows, they run up to that ball and take their kick, right? But sometimes the kicker or the striker, I guess is the technical term, they would just stop for a few seconds and not go yet. They don't have to go right away, right when that whistle blows. They would just pause. And then they would run up to that ball and kick it. And when they did that, their statistical odds of getting the goal went way up. Now, I'm a little foggy on just how high up it went, but it was tremendous. It was like 80% or something. It was tremendous. Like it was, knowing this pause trick, you would do it every time, right? Like it was huge. So this monk, this Venerable Pavaro, he called this the striker's pause, the striker's pause. And so kind of like what the Buddhist lesson here is, sure we can do meditation. Sure we can train up our mindfulness to be stronger, and that's always good. But it then kind of begs the question, well, what do we use that mindfulness for? You know what I mean? What are we going to use that skill for? And over the years, I've come to see that it can make quite a big difference if I just take my time a little more before I do things. Have more of that striker's pause kind of thing in my life. Maybe before speaking to someone, many times I've been talking to people, and for example, and there's something, maybe they're speaking to me. It's a conversation, and I'm sort of kind of eager to have my turn to speak next. And I kind of have some sort of point that I'm wanting to almost launch at them, you know, like, oh, I want to say something now, you know? But no, it's good to pause, even when it's my turn to talk often, you know, just let their point settle a bit, you know, a little pause. And you know what? Oftentimes I will even change my mind at the very last instant. You know what? I could say this a little better or a little different. You know what I mean? Like I actually can, you might say, refine what I was about to say, or maybe change it a little bit, or, you know, or maybe don't say that thing at all. Maybe it's not the smartest next thing to say. There's yet this other thing that's better yet, you know? So these pauses can be tremendously impactful, I say, to sort of give ourselves just a little cool off period before we act, you know? Think twice, you know? There's a famous kind of along the same kind of vein here. It's like the carpenters have a saying you probably heard called measure twice and cut once. Okay, so if you're going to be cutting a, you know, a big 2x4 or something like that, it's always wise to just check your measurement a second time before you saw the piece off or whatever, because if you chop off an extra 2 inches or something accidentally, well, you kind of wasted that whole board now. You can't undo that choice, you know? You're going to have to use a second board. So it's always better to take your time and make sure you measured right. Go back and check your blueprints or whatever. Measure twice and cut once. So this is kind of like that, you know? And this applies to a lot of stuff in life. Where we can take that striker's pause before we act, and maybe we can do things a little better even, you know? And it's amazing what a difference it can make. Even like even things like adjusting our tone of voice, let's say, can make a big difference. You know, let's say I'm in the conversation with this person. We go back to my example here. Let's say I've got this heated point I want to make, you know, I'm passionate about, I got this point to make, and I'm just burning with passion to make this point, you know? But when it's time to speak, what if I just pause and I'm like, as much as I might like to think that, you know, I might think silently, as much as I like to think that my point will be made all the stronger, my point will be made all the more effectively if it is made passionately. As a Buddhist monk, I'm going to suggest the exact opposite. Actually, if we can just cool ourselves down a notch in those sort of heated moments, it's always been my experience that is actually the more effective means to communicate. That's always, if we can just retain our cool cat a little bit more, it's been my experience, the point gets across more effectively. In fact, in the world of Buddhist monasticism, this is just kind of an interesting point of kind of a monastic life that's not intuitive. If you're a Buddhist monk or nun, and you have some sort of point to make, if that point is ever made in any heated, passionate way, you can just about bet you will be met with like resistance to your idea, no matter how good it is. Because all your fellow monks and nuns, it is a safe default to assume that, oh, they are very interested in your tone of voice. They're very interested in any cues you give about maybe how attached you are to getting your way on something, how strongly you want something. To them, they're like, you know, oh, this is the very stuff of training. This is the very stuff of coming out of desires and passions and stuff. You know what I mean? even though you might have like a totally valid point or a whatever, you know, they'll actually be like, oh, we can't let them have that. We can't, we cannot condone this non-application of dispassion. You know what I mean? Some of them will be fussy that way. Eh? Not all of them, but there are going to be some sticklers. Eh? There are going to be some, shall we say, kind of self-appointed passion police who need to, you know, make a lesson out of this. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. So really, it's counterintuitive. It's counterintuitive because, you know, the assumption that's easy to make is like the more passionate we are, the more emotionally charged we are, you know, or maybe even angry we are likely to get our way more, you know. Like if I demand if some person, let's say, demands their money back angrily for some problem in a store or whatever, well, they're more likely to get that money back because they're angry about it, you know. But that's not the Buddhist way. I always find that well-chosen, careful words can be way more effective than those too quickly spoken words. A little bit too, you know, not careful enough spoken words. And it does take mindfulness to do this. It is kind of an act of restraint, isn't it? It is an act of sort of like self-editing, you know? Yeah. Yeah, there are quite a number of suttas, not a huge number, but a considerable number of suttas who kind of dwell on this sort of point and saying things like, you know, whoever speaks in this very like passionate way that's stating a lot of absolutes and ignoring any sort of like exceptions and stuff like this, that's not the speech of a sage. That's not the speech of a wise man. The speech of a wise man, it is made carefully. It is made making distinctions where they should be made. And, you know, kind of not painting too broad a brushstroke on different issues, eh? Yeah. Making generalizations which are not really fair to make, you know? Maybe not mentioning things which, you know, intellectual honesty would have us mention, you know. I've kind of got one little example here. I don't like really talking about politics as a Buddhist monk. I try to stay out of it. But an example did happen to me, you know, not that long ago. And I hope I do not press anybody's buttons here about politics, okay? I like to think I'm pretty not partisan to any one politician, but I have these two very good, very old friends in Saskatoon, and one of them was very, very passionately hating on this politician, this Canadian politician. Well, I guess I can tell you who it is. I won't say who the friend is, but the politician he hated was Trudeau, the Prime Minister. And what had his knickers in a twist was how when that trucker protest was finally broken up after whatever, it was like over a month or something, Trudeau decided to sort of call in these sort of emergency measure powers to break up that. And these emergency measure powers can be quite, shall we say, at the expense of civil liberties, okay? And so my friend was so mad about, like, do we all have to lose our civil liberties? You know, this is not okay. This is like a dictatorship. And he was all like mad, right? Okay. And I'm like, oh, geez. All right, guy, calm down. All right. Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, you shouldn't have done that, Reverend. So I was just trying to calm him down, really, you know, although I wasn't keen on being sucked into hating that politician, you know? And then I talked to, later on, the other friend of mine. Okay, so these two friends, although they're both good friends of mine, they do not hang out with each other too much. Now, the other friend had almost like an opposing view. He's like, no, actually, Trudeau is a good prime minister. He likes Trudeau. You know, maybe he's not perfect. Maybe some of his decisions are not the best decisions. But on the whole, we could do so much worse for a leader, you know. There's way worse leaders in this world. There's way worse countries, way worse, you know, corruption and stuff. Eh? Like, you know, on the whole, Trudeau is actually to be praised, you know, even though he makes some mistakes. And the second friend pointed out, you know, Trudeau only used that emergency measure thing for a short while as they broke up the trucker protest. And once that was all over, then that emergency measure power thing was like rescinded, like it was turned back off again. And all the civil liberties were, you know, restored again as before. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't like we lost the civil liberties and they stayed gone. They were permanently sort of lost, you know? It was just this temporary thing. Now, the first friend neglected to mention this to me. You know, like I don't really watch the news. I don't really research these things. Eh? Like, so all I have to go on is kind of what these guys are saying, you know, just conversationally. And, you know, once in a while I will go fact check stuff, but, you know, I don't want to have to do that as a Buddhist monk. Just because somebody mentioned an incident, I don't want to have to get drawn into, you know, going and researching that thing now, you know? I'm trying to kind of stay aback from politics and anyway. So, you know, like I feel that this first friend of mine was he sort of, you could say, somewhat undermined his arguments by failing to mention that this Emergency Act thing got rescinded. You know what I mean? So I felt, you know, there could have been more intellectual honesty there. There could have, that was a very relevant fact. It was just temporary. Whereas this friend that was all mad, he was implying heavily like, oh, we've lost those liberties and they are gone. Like we're, you know, he was implying that. So, yeah. By the way, there's a good word to describe this. Although I love that friend of mine, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking behind his back in a bad way. But there is an interesting word I want to share, which is paltering. P-A-L-T-E-R-I-N-G. To palter. It's a verb. That is when people make true statements which end up misleading the person listening. You know? So this friend of mine might have said something very much to the effect of like, yeah, when that Emergencies Act was used, we lost our civil liberties. And the paltering there is to imply permanently. We lost them permanently. But the truth of the matter is, no, we just lost them temporarily, which he failed to mention, you know, was just temporary. So whether he intended this or not, I later on came to learn I was misled. So if he meant to mislead, that's paltering. If he actually intended misleading, that's paltering. I never did follow up with my friend and ask, so did you intend to mislead me there? Like, I don't want to bring this up again. You know, I don't want to get him all heated up over this. But anyway, long story short, there's something to be said for calmly stating things and mentioning all the relevant facts, you know, and kind of like if there is a relevant fact, it ought to be aired. That's, you know, that's intellectual honesty. And yeah, there is an art to speech here, which is blameless. And this is a Buddhist teaching, by the way. Like, there are several suttas where the Buddha does talk about speech like this, which is praiseworthy. My most previous Dhamma talk video on my website mentions a selected passage if you'd like to read a little more. I won't go back into it now, but I'm just saying, You know, speech is one of the hardest things to bring mindfulness to, I say, because it's just so easy to just speak too quickly, you know, to just speak the first thing that comes to mind when we get that chance to speak. And it is just about always the case, if we were to pause in this striker's pause kind of way, we could kind of do a little self-editing. It only takes a few seconds, you know, a couple seconds. And the other person will wait. You can almost bet or if they are a sensible, reasonable person, they'll wait for you to speak. Apparently the average person is willing to wait up to 10 seconds for the other person to start speaking when it's clearly their turn to speak. The average person will wait up to 10 seconds. How often do we take even 3 seconds? You know, that's the striker's pause, which we would, I'd say, do well to use more, you know? Like virtually every time I manage to do that, you know, pause, almost without fail, I come up with something a little smarter to say, or a little maybe kinder to say. You know what I mean? Something a little more appropriate. Maybe I consider that person's, their personality a little bit more, or maybe read the situation a little bit more, you know, read their body language a little bit more. And then kind of respond a little more, suitably to the situation. Yeah. So speech is classically one of the hardest things to kind of develop in Buddhism. Many monks have said this, and I agree. Like I've lived in quite a few monasteries, and you have these Buddhist monks and nuns and lay people are all meditating all peacefully. Everyone's going through the routines and chanting, and you know, there's all sorts of activities and stuff. But once people start speaking a little too loosely about this, that, and the other, that's where all the trouble breaks out. Like every time, if there's going to be some trouble to be had, it's, you know, it was some kind of unrestrained speech, or, you know, that tends to, you know, be a factor, like every time. And one of the interesting things that, for those of you who here have been on a Goenka retreat, they even tell you this on the Goenka retreat right towards the end. And maybe this is a opportune time to also mention it here, because we're at the end of our day now, where on these 10-day retreats, of course, everybody's supposed to be nobly silent the whole time, not talking. And then Goenka says, yes, so all of you, you know, have practiced hard, and you've developed all your mindfulness and etc., and maybe you've even had some nice deep meditations. But now, before you go home, we're going to have a time of where we all start talking again, where we all start loosening up this noble silence thing. And you're all going to violate your morality several times before you leave this place. You know, you're going to exaggerate this, or accidentally lie about that, or, you know, speak misleadingly on this, or... you know, just through the normal course of going back to normal speech, it's just so easy. It's just so easy to just speak in a way that's, it's just not kind of true. You know what I mean? And when I say true, I mean like straight. You know what I mean? It's not quite straight. There's some kind of a tilt, maybe, on what we're saying. Some kind of a... we start adding our own little... you might say... whatever little agenda we have begins to sneak into our speech. You know what I mean? Whatever proclivities we have can start sneaking in there, or whatever. Like kind of our own sort of... perspectives which are something we feel kind of passionate about. You know, the passion of that, those perspectives can sneak in there, and that's enough for it to sort of it kind of tilts it a bit, you know, that bit of passion in there. It's not quite straight anymore. It's not quite true anymore. So it is surprisingly hard. Speech is surprisingly hard. So, maybe I'll just kind of wrap it up by saying, yes, you practiced some mindfulness today. Thank you so much. And you've been all great about around noble silence yourself. And I did not once hear anybody's phone making noise today. That was so refreshing. You're kind of like the first group I think ever who did that. That's awesome. But you know, okay, you're about to head back to your lives. As you leave here, and next will be, it won't be long before the challenge of right speech will be upon you. Okay, and. Insofar as you can keep your mindfulness, strong and use it with the striker's pause, and you'll be surprised that you might be able to bring more like quality to your relationships, quality to your, whatever it is you're doing. Just putting that little bit of extra finesse, can go a long way, Okay, well, I'll wrap it up there, and